So 200 metres left to go. Tar Heel Blur, Frankenstar on the scene. My Button's Bigger staying on in the centre, but Frankenstar moves up strongly. 150 out. Frankenstar from Tar Heel Blur. Frankenstar just in front gets there. Frankenstar by a head, Tar Heel Blur. And they got 2.5 lengths.
Well, that was Geelong yesterday. And I heard Catherine Durden before the race mention there was a little bit of war history in the family and how much she'd love to have a runner in the Jericho Cup. And then I thought, but she wondered whether Frankenstar would make the cut. And then Frankenstar came out and won. And I thought, oh, hopefully that means Frankenstar has made the cut. Well, he's sort of half in, half out. He's number 16, and it's a full gate of 14. So Catherine needs a couple of little things to go her way as she joins me. How are you, Catherine?
Yeah, good, thanks, Matt.
Yeah, it's a shame we need a couple of dropouts, don't we, for Frankenstar?
Yeah, a couple of scratchings would be good.
Yeah, yeah. Any indication from any other stables about whether that may happen or not?
No, I haven't heard anything. The only thing is I'm looking at the field and there's a few runners that haven't got jockeys yet, so there's still a little bit of hope, but... yeah, I mean, generally with these races, you know, acceptance is pretty much stand.
Interesting backup, though. Andrew Kelly, who we spoke to earlier in the week, and you might remember last year's Jericho, the best story came via the consolation with Savvy Acquisition and Andrew Clark, and talking about his great-grandfather, Digger Clark, and the connection to the Coffey family and marriages that took place many years later and diaries that were returned to loved ones from battlefields and so on. So you... if you're not in the big race, you'll be in the consolation and at least you get to be part of the overall vibe of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's right. So, you know, I'd love to get into the big race, but, you know, if we don't, we're in the consolation and it is the vibe of the day. You know, it's a great day and it's great to see the crowds and whatnot that have been getting there even through COVID and that. It's got a great feel about it.
And you did mention in a pre-race interview yesterday that there was a connection in your family. What's the backstory with your family and our Anzac history?
Okay, yeah. So my great-grandfather on my father's side was actually killed in Ypres in the First World War in Belgium.
Right.
So, my grandfather went over in, I think, 1937. He didn't know his father, so he went over there in 1937. And so we've got a, collection of photos, you know, through the ages. And then my dad went over, I think it was in 2000 or 2002. And my nieces have been over, and also Craig, Tristan, who's our son, and I, we went over in... 2018, and you know, did a tour really of a lot of the war graves there and that, and you know, went to see my great grandfather's grave there. But it's you know, I don't think you really get to appreciate the you know, lives lost until you see, you know, the rows and rows of graves.
Where is Ypres? Because it's for people like me, it's something that I'm not aware of the battlefields of Ypres in Belgium. What was the story there? As much as you know,
So it was. I think it's called the Western Front. I think it was. So yeah. So really, it's not far out of. The town is called Ypres, and it was called the Third Battle of Ypres, which is in Belgium and. Yeah, he was actually buried in the Hutt Cemetery in Dickiebusch. So, yes, I think that it is actually called the Western Front.
Yeah, right, okay.
Where they were all fighting there, yeah.
And it was just, you know, this isn't the platform for delving too much into war misery, but it was just the waste of it is something that dawns on you, especially, I imagine, you and your dad and your granddad, when they went over there and saw the rows and rows of graves, just the futility of the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, you know, I mean, even though, you know, there's Anzac Day and, you know, honouring all the soldiers, I mean, not just in the past, but, well, not soldiers, but servicemen, not just in the past, but, you know, now as well, yeah. I just don't think, well, as I say, for me personally, that you realise the gravity of the lives lost.
Hence, when Bill Gibbons imagination got sparked when he read a book about Bill the Bastard and then created this amazing day. It gives us another platform to understand the gravity of what happened without it being forced down our throats on Jericho Day. I think the way it's done with the light infantry and the poignancy of the last post, and there's little booths as well for those who are, and kids especially, who are curious to know a little bit more than they already know. There's infantry in, on track at Warrnambool to sort of gently educate about the horrors of what happened. So it's the perfect way to explain it, isn't it, Jericho Cup Day?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, as you say, it's sort of done in a great way with the races, you know, particularly with the Jericho Cup and then the other support races named after, I think one of the ones, you know, Bathsheba and things like that. So it is, and it gives, you know, young people a, I think because on the day they do like a background on, you know, what the race is named after prior to the race, to give people some sort of history as to why the race is named after that person. So, yeah, I think it's a great concept and I think it's done really well.
Yeah, absolutely. The one that captured my imagination was a horse called Midnight, the black mare, who went over one of the very few thoroughbreds that joined the Whalers in the battlefields. And she took a bullet for her loyal rider, and I think she perished on the battlefield, but he survived because the mare took the brunt of the bullet. I don't know whether you've read up on Midnight, but you've got to read the story of Midnight.
Yeah, no, I have read that. And it's interesting, even before this day, I heard the or read about Bill the Bastard too. So when this was before the Jericho Cup had actually, you know, been started, was I sort of knew about that Bill the Bastard as well. So yeah, I've sort of done a little bit of reading over the years, and you know, for me, it sort of sparked my interest, that's for sure.
Speaking of Bill the Bastard, Bill Gibbons and I laugh every now and then. It could be named after him. Billy is not well. He's not going to be able to make it to the Jericho this year, and everyone knows he would if he could. So he's actually not well. And our thoughts go out to Bill, and we hope he makes a really rapid recovery and that he's back on board for next year's Jericho. Hey, Kath, tell us about Frankenstar, the backstory with Frankenstar. Where did Frankenstar come from?
Well, he's actually, we bought him on one of the English online sales, and we weren't really looking for a horse, but I always look through the English sales, and I said to Craig, I said, this is a horse we should be buying, and, you know, because we looked at his breeding, and he's by Fiorente out of a Galileo mare. Anyway, we thought, oh, you know...
Of course, the Galileo connection with Wells still rings true, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you've got to stick with what you know. Then that's done well with you. So, anyway, yeah, we thought, oh, yeah, we'll go. We won't pay too much for him. We'd had a look at his a few of his races. He was very lightly raced. I think he'd only had four or five starts, and he just looked like a real baby. And we thought, you know, he'd be worth a try, and we always looked in the view to going jumping with them. So, anyway, we're outside doing something, and then I said, oh, Craig, that horse will be going through in a minute. So, anyway, we came inside, and I think there was 10 minutes to go or something, and he was... I think up to 6.5 grand. So I thought, right, we'll put him one bid and that's it. Well, anyway, we got him, and we're pretty happy. He's been like a very handy little horse to us. That was his third win for us yesterday. But he's a little bit quirky. He can he's thrown a couple of races away. He sort of gets to the front and waits for his friends. And he's started a chuka. He gave the race away. Yeah, he hit the front and he starts pulling up, and one got up on the inside and beat him. But anyway, yeah, lucky Jared gave him a beautiful ride yesterday and just, you know, tried to wait as long as he possibly could and get his nose in front on the line, which happened. So that was good, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the up and overs will be on the agenda in the next 12 months or so.
Yeah, absolutely. He won a couple of races for us, his first prep for us, and anyway, we brought him back, and he had just a little issue. He had an entrapped epiglottis, and so I had to give him a break, and he came back again, and he's been racing really well this preparation and, you know, nice and consistently in that. And he just looks like just a genuine, genuine stayer. After the weekend, he'll have a break and then we'll bring him back up to go jumping next year.
I was talking to the club about the potential tie-ins between the Grand Annual and the Jericho Cup and whether the Grand Annual winner should be granted automatic entry into the Jericho, even if they've got a European pedigree, which at the moment is not allowed. Do you... A couple of trainers I spoke to said it's very hard to get them up for both Warrnambool in May and also a Jericho Cup. Is it something feasible with a horse like Frankenstar to peak for the two big Warrnambool days?
Look, I think, well, with Frankenstar, probably yes. He's such a relaxed horse. You know, he doesn't overdo anything in his training or anything like that. So I do think it would be very dependent on the horse in that respect. But in the respect of European stayers, I think this the Jericho Cup should be kept to the Australasian bred horses, and I think that's a, you know, because of the significance of what it's about, you know, Australian racing staying horses are definitely, there's a lot of European horses, you know, infiltrating it because they do breed such brilliant stayers. So I just think that would ruin the...
Overrun it a bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Tommy Ryan said exactly the same thing when I spoke to him, saying you make a very good point. Jig Craig would love to have been able to ride in a Jericho, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Well, too late, old son, too late.
Yeah.
fingers crossed that you do make it into the Jericho field, and if not, the consolation is still going to be a lovely experience for you. Kath, well done with Frankenstar yesterday, and look forward to seeing you and Craig down there on Sunday.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.